Welcome to the
No problem.
podcast called The Battle for African Agriculture, where we explore the intersection of food, power, food sovereignty in Africa and beyond. I'm your host, Million Belay, and today I'm honored to speak with Professor Muhammad Koulibaly, an environmental lawyer and a leading expert in public law based in Bamako, Mali. He has worked extensively on legal and political issues affecting agriculture, intellectual property, and food sovereignty in Africa. Professor Koulibaly has written widely on the African Union, the OAP region, and UBO 1991. Critical topics in today's struggle for seed sovereignty on the continent. Welcome, Professor Mohammed.
Thank you, Million. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Thank you. So let's start from the beginning. Why were you attracted to the seed world? Why are you working on seed now? What's the story?
Oh, thank you. Thank you. That's a good question. Because in my background, I did law, and specifically private law with a focus on banking law and financial law. So I was destined to work as a private lawyer, advising banks and financial sector. But yeah, when I graduated from university in Bamako, that was a bachelor, I wanted to continue the studies. And I did a master in environmental law. And doing that, I've been exposed to issues like climate change, biodiversity protection, and degradation, land degradation, and things like that. And right after, I found a job with an organization in Mali called IRPAD, the Research Institute for the Promotion of Alternatives in Development, which is chaired by Mamadou Goïta.
Yeah, he's a friend, you know.
Ah, okay. You know Mamadou. Yeah, so Mamadou was a mentor to me. And I was also exposed to all the issues, IRPAD and all the farmers organizations and their allies in Mali and West Africa worked on back in the days and still work on seed issues, GMO issues, farmers' rights, land, and things like that. So I enjoyed it. I learned a lot, and then I decided just to remain in this field and oriented all my knowledge and my research in the seed and land sector.
We're very much happy to have you in our world, you know. We don't have so many seed experts in Africa, especially seed laws. It's a very
seed
complicated
laws,
and complex issue. Let's start from the complexity, you know. What is UPOV 1991? And what are the key differences between its earlier version, UPOV 1978?
Oh, thank you. For the beginning, I just wanted to stress that UPOV stands for the Union. It's an organization pour la protection des obtentions végétales. This is the French for protection of plant varieties, new plant varieties. This is because it started in France, initiative from the breeders sector, so, who wanted to protect their interests and their rights on the new seed varieties that the new plant varieties that they developed. And it was established in 1961 and then was revised twice, first in 1978 and in 1991. The 1978 revision, which is called the 1978 Act of UPOV, was quite, I would say, not so much restrictive because it was not directed to the protection of all types of varieties, type of species, varieties from different species. It's only applied to up to 24 identified varieties. While the 91 revision of the UPOV applies to all species, this is one key difference. The other difference, maybe before entering into the content of the convention itself, the first big difference is that the 1978 convention cannot be entered into by any countries anymore. It was close to vision, exactly right after the 91 revision. Once
so
they
if you
adopted,
want to, if you want to join the UPOV process, you have to join UPOV 91.
91, exactly. So
it's no joining of 1978.
It's not no more possible.
Okay.
1978 is still in force, but for countries who joined back
earlier.
Then, at that time, exactly, earlier. But now, if you want to join UPOV, you are in the obligation to adopt UPOV 91.
Okay.
And then what are the differences between the two? First, the scope of application is different. 78 applies to determined varieties, and the number is 24. The varieties of defined species. These species are.
What is determined variety?
No, I mean they are identified and
already,
determined.
Already, okay. Identified
exactly,
variety.
Already determined.
Okay.
While the 91 apply to all, and there is no exception. All varieties, the UPOV, all species, I should say, because species is different from a variety.
Obviously, yeah.
Exactly. So all
species can have a lot of varieties.
Exactly, exactly. While the 78 identify 24 species, the 91 version applies to all species. That's a big difference. Another difference is on the duration of the plant breeders.
Sorry, what is the implication of that? What is the implication of the 1978 only 24 and the 1991 all species?
All.
What is the
implication? That's important. The implication is that there is no flexibility under 91. If you adhere to 91, if you are implementing 91 in your country, you cannot exclude some variety.
Yeah.
Any species, exactly.
Okay.
So some countries may say this type of this species is a food security species, for example. Varieties under the species are very used in food security. I don't want to put them in under protection. But you cannot do that if you have 91. While if you have 78, you can still choose what comes under the protection, what cannot be protected.
That's very clear. That's very
clear.
For you, for example, Funyo is very important. For us, F is very important.
Exactly.
But if we join 1991, there's no difference.
No difference. All
Thank you. Very good. Clear.
Yes.
That's the first.
The first one. The second one is on the duration of the rights, because the PVP system provides for protection of breeders' rights for a certain period, meaning that the breeders has the exclusive right to the variety during that period. Anybody who wants to use the variety and the type of use will be defined under the convention, the system. And we are focusing on the UPOV system now because there are other systems. Then during that time, you need the authorization from the breeder to perform some acts on the variety. And for the 78 Act, the duration is 15 years, except for grapevines and trees, which can be protected for 18 years. So it's 15 years for all except two types, grapevines and trees, for 18 years. And for the UPOV 91, it's 20 years. So they increased the duration.
By 5 years,
Exactly, by 5 years, which means more protection, more duration.
Yeah.
And then 25 years for
grapevines, trees,
and trees. The other big difference is on the scope of the breeders' rights. We have spoken the scope of the convention of the law itself, but now breeders' rights also has a scope. To what acts does it extend? First, under the 78 Act, it does not extend to harvested material. It does not extend to essentially derived variety. And this needs to be explained. The Act of 78 provides just for protection for when you are using the propagating material from the protected seeds for the purposes of commercial marketing, then you need an authorization from the breeders, right? And then you negotiate. Maybe you will pay royalty and or things like that. But you need this authorization. And if you are doing the sale or the marketing of this propagating material, you need its authorization. Except to type of use of the variety, you don't need its authorization, meaning that even farmers can exchange the seeds. And then in 91, they remove this type of exception. The convention of 91 says it applies to the exploitation, and they define the exploitation very widely to include different types of acts, like even exportation, imports, and stocking, plus sailing, using for sale or things like that, of the propagating material of the protected variety. And in 91, they extended the rights to the harvested material obtained without the authorization of the breeder and the essentially derived varieties. Essentially derived variety means the varieties that are similar or are not distinguishable from the protected variety. So, for example, if a breeder happened to develop a new variety that may not be so distinct from the protected
the original
variety.
Yeah.
This variety will still be
under
the variety of the breeder who protected their variety in the first place.
Can I give you example?
Yes.
Wheat.
Yes.
Very important in Ethiopia, and we have more than 100 varieties of wheat. Let's say that a breeder takes two varieties of wheat. One is resistant to one kind of virus.
Yes.
And the other one grows fast.
Yes.
So it is to combine and produce a variety which resists virus and grows fast. Now he produces this variety.
Yes.
And puts it to the market. So what you are telling me, any other variety where this breeder didn't work on, the other wheat varieties,
yes,
will still be considered under this protection. They will be considered as a property of the breeder.
If they have the same, what you call it, characters or characteristics, yes. If the description are the same, for example, if you compare them, you don't see any
visible differences.
Exactly. It will be called essentially derived varieties. And this is even an issue for our traditional, what we call them, traditional land races.
Yeah.
Because, for example, if you want to protect your own traditional variety, because the system allows for opposition when somebody is fighting for the protection, a community may say, for example, oh, the variety they want to protect comes from us. It's part of our national heritage, for example. So you cannot protect it because this is excluded from protection. They are called known, publicly known varieties. So you cannot protect them. But the issue is that the a breeder happened to stabilize the variety, to make it uniform, And based on these two characters, it will be distinguishable or distinguished from these land
Other
races,
variety, yeah.
other varieties. Then you cannot claim that the uniform and stabilized variety is from your national heritage, because we know these are heterogeneous varieties.
Yeah. But when you look at the seed, it's very difficult to tell
exactly
whether it is stable or uniform. You have to plant it to see.
Exactly. So that's why I'm giving this example, because say, for example, now you decide to work on your national heritage and you want to protect it. Because if you want to protect it under this system, you have to abide by the conditions that the system put forward. And these conditions are just four: new, distinct, uniform, and stable. So if you want to protect your variety, which is close to the breeder's variety, you have to now bring it under the same system, under the same criteria, and then it will be like the same, and you cannot have the protection. So this is like a restrictive protection, a very strong protection for breeders' breeders' rights.
So this is sad.
And this happened in the 91 revision.
Yeah. Okay.
It was not in the 78 act. Another difference is the farmer's privilege, which is very important when it comes to AFSA and the farmers.
You know, everybody, so every African, it's not only to AFSA.
Exactly, I know. So to everybody. In 78, in 78, farmers could, under the system, save their seeds, replant it, and even exchange the seeds among themselves, because the system allowed for that. That was called the exception to the breeder's right. But this exception has been restricted in 91 to only one single act that a farmer can perform on the propagating material, let's say seed, for example, on the seed of the protected variety, which means that farmers can only use it, save it from a production in their own farm and reuse it still in their own farm. Meaning they cannot exchange it, they cannot sell it, and they can only save it. And if they have to replant it, they have to replant it for their own consumption, not for the market, not for exchanging with others. So
can
this
they
is
store,
very
can they store it and replant it for themselves? For example, can they harvest?
Yes.
Can they harvest and store the seed and replant it for their own purposes?
Yeah. If
under
now they if they reuse, if they want to reuse it, it has to be for themselves in their own farm. So they cannot go out, they cannot exchange it. So that's the only act that is permitted under UPOV 91. And this is optional. It means that a country may or may not allow this and still be in conformity with UPOV.
So,
it's not
this can also be prevented.
Exactly, exactly. So if a country decides that farmers cannot save and reuse, the law will pass and this will just be implemented in the country and still be called by UPOV compliance, UPOV 91 compliant.
But
because, just a precision to give, because the UPOV convention in itself does not apply by itself. It's countries that adhere to UPOV that will now implement it at the national level. And for them to implement it, they have to take a national law. And by taking or adopting a national law, then you look at the UPOV convention and you produce the same thing if you want to comply with UPOV, and then apply it. So when you decide not to insert a provision on the saving, you are not against UPOV. To the contrary, you are even doing what UPOV would like to see more in countries.
But anyway, you know, if you save their seed, company seed, replant it again and again, it will get weaker. That's what we know.
Exactly.
Anyway, so going to the next question, which is very much important. You know, if you remember, our African leaders have produced the African Model Law, you know?
Yes.
On plant variety protection. How do you contrast the African Model Law on plant variety protection with UPOV 91?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's also a good one. Because that happened after UPOV 91, but very early, in the years 2000 or by the end of the 90s. It's important because it's completely different from the UPOV. First, because UPOV focuses only on breeders' rights, while the AU Model Law has tried to balance between breeders' rights, farmers' rights, and even communities' rights. Because of the realities in Africa, they developed a legal framework that countries could look at, because it's a model law. It's not a law in itself that will apply directly, but it was developed just to guide and inspire Africans to look at it and adapt their plant variety protection system and conciliate it with farmers' rights and communities' rights. This is very important, and this is completely a different system from what UPOV has developed. And first, the breeder's rights is not the same as under the UPOV system. There are a lot of exceptions. Farmers' rights are also clearly defined and protected, which is not the case in the UPOV system. We have just what we call farmer's privilege. It's not even considered as a right. And then the communities themselves are considered as also the owners of some genetic resources for which, if you want to access, you need to have their prior informed consent, and you have also to tell them what you are going to do what with the varieties, and if there is any commercial exploitation on the genetic resources, you have to share benefits with them. So we can say that African countries tried and even succeeded in putting in a place a system that implements the CBD convention, the Convention on the Biological Diversity, and also the TRIPS Agreement, because all this happened after the adoption of the TRIPS Agreement of the WTO, which is
we'll
the trade.
We'll come to that later.
Exactly.
On.
Yeah. So they were trying to also contextualize all these instruments at the African level for countries
to give a clarity to the African Union.
Give a clarity. Unfortunately, it was not followed or even applied by countries, which is very unfortunate. But maybe we still have opportunities or rooms for countries to look at it, to adapt their law. It's still useful.
Yeah, it's related to our sovereignty, you see. The other world, you know, the Western world, as we call it, very much wants us to be part of UPOV 1991 because it's important for their marketing opportunity. But for us, the African Model Law is much better. Let's go to our current legal landscape of seed laws in Africa, particularly OAP countries. I remember you presenting a very fascinating analysis of the implementation of UPOV in the with the 16 countries, you know, happy countries?
17, yeah.
17. So what is the story there and why did it fail? Where does the UPOV 91 stand in terms of influence?
Okay, that's a good question. Maybe first, we have to dis when we say seed laws in general,
mm-hmm.
we have to distinguish at least two things.
Mm-hmm.
There are two types of law.
Mm-hmm.
First, the seed marketing law,
mm-hmm.
That will just come for the commercialization or trade in seeds,
mm-hmm.
in a country or in a region. It can be there without a PVP law.
Mm-hmm.
And the second one is the PVP law. So OAPI mm-hmm. is a PVP system, but many OAPI countries have also a commercial seed law. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
That's the first distinction to have in place. And this is why when you ask the landscape for seed laws,
mm-hmm.
I would first say it's a big paradox.
Mm-hmm.
And why I say that is mm-hmm. because of the gap or the disconnect between the realities
mm-hmm.
and the laws.
Mm-hmm.
Because
what do you mean? Yeah.
I mean, from the beginning, I was saying what we see in our countries are laws
mm-hmm.
imported from developed countries. We rarely mm-hmm. or never
mm-hmm.
developed laws in line with our own realities.
Mm-hmm.
So all the laws that we see in seed sector are mostly influenced or even mimicking what is mm-hmm. in Europe and developed countries,
mm-hmm.
be it for seed commercialization, seed marketing,
mm-hmm.
and PVP. For mm-hmm. seed commercialization or seed marketing laws, for example, you will see sometimes even the exclusion of peasant practices
mm-hmm.
and peasant or farmers seed systems.
Mm-hmm.
They are not recognized, they are not allowed. So the objective is to establish an industrial or a commercial agricultural system in
mm-hmm.
Africa. It is a paradox, but because despite all these efforts to have good laws, quote unquote, they call them good laws, you have them, but on the ground, farmers are continuing to use their own seeds and the local and traditional seeds. The food security seeds comes from this system that we call farmer seed system or peasant seed system, that some refer to as informal seed system. It is a paradox again because we've never tried to look at these systems because of this key role in food security in our countries to say, hey, we have a problem. We need also to recognize these systems, I put them in plural, and also to develop legal frameworks that adapt to those systems, to look at them as they are, not for what we want them to be. Because what we want them to be is what we are putting in the law, because we think we are moving towards a commercial system. Exactly. Which is the opposite of what we should be doing. And OAPI is also an example of that.
Mm-hmm.
Because
can you abbreviate OAPI?
OAPI is the Organisation Africaine de la Propriété Intellectuelle. It's the French for the African Organization for Intellectual Property.
This is so like the ARIPO, the African Regional Intellectual Property.
Property, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's the Francophone equivalent of ARIPO.
ARIPO, okay.
Yeah, and it establishes protection system for different types
mm-hmm.
of IP. This
mm-hmm.
is important because from the beginning, there was no plant variety protection in the system.
Mm-hmm.
There were nine key PVP, no, not PVP, IP
mm-hmm.
system, patents, geographical indications, and things
mm-hmm.
like that. But patent PVP came after the adoption of TRIPS, WTO agreement. Some countries or donors or some influent organizations saw an opportunity in OAPI to develop a system for the purpose of implementing the TRIPS agreement. So this led OAPI to revise its establishing convention called the Bangui Agreement and to add a PVP system called Annex 10. The nine other systems were Annex 1 to Annex 9, and then we've seen the addition of Annex 10 that implement completely UPOV 91. So it was developed, modeled after UPOV 91, making OAPI the only organization in the world to have a unique system for 17 countries, meaning if a breeder apply for protection under the OAPI system, the protection will be valid for the 17 countries.
Incredible. Where, yes. When did this start?
The discussion started since 1995, I guess.
Wow, or 90. Really? That long, huh?
Yeah, or 97, because the adoption for WTO was in 95, I think, and then right after, they started discussion. Since now the TRIPS agreement are in force, countries should implement, whereas the TRIPS agreement does not obligate any country to follow UPOV. It just says countries need to have a sui generis system.
It's like the African modello system.
Exactly. So yeah. they have to have their own system to protect plant varieties.
Yeah. But what is the experience of these 17 countries? By the way, are they all Francophone countries?
All except, I guess, two. There are just two Portuguese-speaking countries, like Cabo Verde, and Guinea-Bissau. Mozambique is very far.
Yeah,
it's also done on a geographic basis somehow.
Okay. Yeah,
because you see, all the countries have borders somehow among themselves, from West Africa to Central Africa.
So, how was the failure? I mean, what surprised me was, I think all those years, they've tried to implement and they tried to produce seeds, and the seeds were not like NDOS, you know, they are not new, they're not distinct, they are not uniform, they're not stable, you know?
Yeah.
It was a complete failure, the OAP initiative. And can you expand on that?
Yes. I had the chance to participate in an assessment of the implementation of this system in 2017, because it entered into force in 2006. So in 2017, it was like 10 years after it entered into force. We wanted to know how it worked, what have the promises been kept. So we were.
What were the promises? Sorry, what were the? This is very important. What were the promises?
There were many promises. The first one being it will increase investment in seeds. It will develop innovation and industrial seed activities in the countries. It will contribute to food security. And it will increase also, the economic outcome of the agriculture, because if we boost the seed sector, the commercial production of food will increase and it will have some...
All this.
All this, exactly.
That increase productivity.
Productivity, exactly. So we took all these key... I would say promises that are even now used, because just this is a
Yeah,
bracket.
that's why.
This is Benin. Benin, for example, who's a which is a member of OAPI, is trying to join HUPOV again. And then these are the same arguments
yeah.
are used to convince people to say, this is why we want to join. So when we assessed it, we found that this did not happen. Mm-hmm. None of these promises materialized in the context of OAPI. To the contrary, the law is there, it's not even used as they wanted it to be. First of all, in the 10 years, we've seen no increase in industrial seed activities. To the contrary, the main seed production is done by the public sector, which was there way before because of the implication of the states in agricultural development in those countries. And all these are civil servants producing or developing seeds based on the national gene heritage to spread new varieties for farmers to crop. And when OAPI was entering into force, they also wanted to encourage these public sectors organization also to protect some varieties. And this is where they made an exception for a transitional period for, say, existing varieties to be protected. And this is where what increased even the number of varieties under protection, because more than maybe 50 or 55 or 60% of the varieties under protection came from this sector and were already available for more than 10 years, 15 or even 20 years for some varieties. That's the first, I would say, example for the failure of the system, because no new variety per se was developed.
Came out of that, yeah.
Exactly. Second, the fact that it's an expensive system, because you have to pay to protect your varieties and you pay a fee year after year. If there is no market,
as
if
a
there
breeder,
is no
as a breeder.
User, exactly, you you have no return. And that's why many breeders just abandoned, decided not to pay fees and just to let their varieties be in the public domain. This happened to us in Mali, for example, where the National Agricultural Agronomic Institution had protected 50 varieties based on a World Bank funding. They did not take the money from the national budget. So they protected under a project and nothing happened. And then in the end, they just decided not to protect them. And they all lost protection under the system. This is just to tell you that the the promises that
they
mirror to people.
it will be actually interesting why the Benin government will go to a failed system. It's fair.
Exactly.
Why are they going to? I mean, the next question is related to that. You know, you worked on political economy of seed legislation.
Yes.
What forces, internal and external, are shaping the seed laws adopted by African governments today?
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's important, because this is linked also to all these discussions that we had before on the previous question. The African paradox, the importation or even the adoption of non-adapted systems in our context. It's also out of pressure, for sure, because the countries are somehow pressured by donors, by development partners, and also under some specific projects. I've mentioned the two types of law. Let's take, for example, the law on seed marketing, because this main legal framework that are being also harmonized, if not already harmonized, at least in West Africa, we know it's completely harmonized because all the countries have the same, almost the same law in place. It's done through sometimes trade agreement, free trade agreements. Countries who would like to join the free trade agreements with European countries or any other developed countries like the US or other countries may be forced or under the obligation to bring their laws into a certain standard. And this standard, these standards have been already pushed at the regional level. So they will just say, if you want, if you are part of this agreement, your law should follow such or such other standards. And sometimes you, I mean many times UPOV is one of the standards.
Yeah.
And then the regional harmonized seed systems or seed law are also mentioned, because those regional seed laws or seed regulations have been already harmonized based on OECD standards or AFTA, AFTA, which is different from AFSA, African or ISTA, ISTA, International Seed Trade Association standards. So all of this comes under these agreements. Projects funded by international donors or the World Bank or European countries. I even remember you, maybe you remember these compacts that
the FDB?
The FDB, AFDB is also part of it, because sometimes they have projects for agricultural development. It's like broad projects, but under or inside the project, you would see elements of different sector development, and then seed or land sector legislation will come under these.
Do you have a particular example, by the way, of this kind of force by or internal pressure by countries, by, for example, the European Union or by the World Bank or by the French government?
EU used to have a program on that, the Nansan, for example.
Nansan,
I can't remember exactly the abbreviation, the definition of it,
but
it is the new alliance. It was the new alliance, NA, for
New Alliance San.
San is S-A-N. Because I had a research project with Grain on that, with Grain. We looked at the key influences on seed laws and land laws in Africa. So there was NANSAN, which was developed by European countries. We have also the Agricultural Development Program of the World Bank. Call it AGDPO, Agricultural Development. The PO, I can't remember, but yeah, I can look at it. But it's like a conditionality program. The bank will bring funding to you based on certain conditions that you have to respect or fulfill. And within those conditions, we have regulatory frameworks. And it can also lead to the change in seed laws. We have also a USAID, which maybe no more exists today. But yes, I remember a project in West Africa funded by USAID that was there to support the implementation of the harmonized seed regulation in West Africa. Because one thing is to have the legislation in place, the other thing is to have it implemented. So if countries have no means or no will to implement them, there will still be some pressure for them to still make it operational. And West African Seed Project, the WASP, was one example of that, where in which USAID brought the funding to, I guess, 11 or 12 countries to implement the West African Seed Regulation at the national level. And
Ah,
the
it's a wasp.
one
It's
of
very,
the
very much
of,
interesting.
yeah.
But the question is now, there is a very interesting initiative in Africa, the African
Yes.
Free Continental Trade Area,
Yeah.
So that process, I know that they have produced the main framework and there are a number of annexes, and one of these annexes is on PVP. So, how do IP provisions in Africa relate to UPOV 91 and seed policy as a threat to farmers' rights, as you have observed?
I had also a chance, as you said in the introduction, to look at the some of the continental free trade legal instruments. First of all, I think it could be also an opportunity, but with a lot of risk. And why I say that? Because first of all, African countries together as an organization, the African Union, is developing this big framework. So it's led by Africans. The first thing to know, I mean, to understand, is that there are no obligations for them to implement UPOV 91. This is clear to all of us. And if they have to be an annex on PVP, the opportunity is there to develop an African system based on what we've said, the African model law, and also the new developments that happened after the model law have been adopted, because it was adopted in the 2000s. From there to now, we have a lot of developments. And the development of this continental free trade area could be an opportunity to really develop an African PVP system adapted to the African context. Having said that, the risk is that we are talking about free trade. Free trade, we know. We
What
have
it
a
means,
lot of experience. We have a lot of experience on it. We know the orientation of it, the main objective, and things like that. So this is the big risk that this may not may be another reproduction of what we see elsewhere in free trade. We also have some countries that entered in free trade agreement with Europe, with other countries, and were forced to follow the UPOV 91. The question mark remain: will Africans see UPOV 91 as the only example to facilitate trade in seeds? But yes, they can also, as I've said, develop an adapted framework to Africa. And if they want to do that, they have to look at the realities in Africa, the interests of farmers, the interests of African countries. Because if we develop the free trade area, for example, we wrote about the investment treaty, for example, where an investor is defined as a business created on the African soil, which means anybody can come and create a business
Yeah, obviously
in
this.
Africa and engage in trade in Africa and still benefit of the advantages of the free trade area, which means that a multinational company can still come
Yeah,
develop exactly a business and then trade in Africa and take all the benefits. So we have to think really for Africans, for the benefit of Africans, and in the interest of African. So to conclude
actually,
on that,
yeah.
yes, go ahead.
No, I was just agreeing with you in saying that, the KADAP, the Kampala Declaration
Yes.
and Kampala Action Plan basically invites business to come and invest
Yes.
in Africa. And a business does not
Ah,
come
you see?
to
You see?
support, African farmers or to support African government agenda. The main purpose of business is profit. That's obvious. So if it is free trade and if the
Yeah.
door is open for countries to receive a product from another
Yeah.
country,
So
what kind of product,
exactly. We need to remain really alert.
vigilant, yeah.
So I think we need to at some point see the documents and provide any comments or feedback to say yes, this is an African agenda. We need to make it really for Africans. So
Yeah,
that's
I
the
totally
only
agree with
thing we
you.
can do for now. But CADEP was also the same, but I
Yeah.
saw your quote.
Yeah. I think you've already responded to this. What is the implication of COP91 for farmers? Actually, do they know about
Yeah.
it? Do they know about it? Even in a government office who are supposed to know about it, how many of them really know about it?
Yeah. That's a good question because it's a big challenge in Africa. I can say yes and no. Yes, why? Because of the efforts of farmers' organizations, some NGOs that support them, to train them, empower them, to know the laws, not only UPOV, but all the agricultural policies and laws for them to be able now to engage. That's something really to support and applaud for. I know many organizations that do that and work with farmers to enlighten them on those issues. Not the same is done for our countries, for example. Sometimes they are not so open also to discussions. For example, if you take the example of Benin, they are trying to join UPOV. There is a lot of noise, among the citizens that are saying we don't want UPOV. Up to now, they are continuing. So this is also the gap between the governance system and the people, and this does not help. It doesn't help sometimes our country's governments and officials do not understand the real issues, or maybe even if they know, there are some stakes behind that they are not transparent about, some pressure they don't want a support from the people about. So that's the big challenge. But besides that, I would see the efforts that people are doing on the ground. The good examples in Francophone countries, in Anglophone countries, I've been personally involved in both. For example, in West Africa, with COPAGEN, we did a lot of information sensitization and even campaign against biosafety laws and UPOV was already there, but back in 1999, I know some organization was engaged because they said it was not good for Africa. But the main issue is lack of transparency, lack of consultation, public space for people to speak and to be listened to, and sometimes to be followed. Because if that was the case, all the laws that we have in place, we would not have had them. or at least we would have had some laws for the system that the people are using, the peasant seed system, agroecology, and things like that. But this is not really happening, but there is still hope, because some are awakening to the call and listening to farmers, their organizations, and allies. We will see how we can still support and push for some changes at the national levels, but also at the regional level.
Exactly. But question is, do you know any African government who has challenged Group of 91?
Any
Maybe one of the countries in the 17 countries challenging WAPI, or?
Oh, that's a good question. Because when I was doing the research for the WAPI assessment, at that time, WAPI was trying to join UPOV. They were in the process of joining UPOV as an organization. This happened already, because WAPI is the only organization in the world to be a member as an organization. The individual countries are not member yet. So when OAPI tried to join, there was a debate. Some countries did not want to be part of this, but as they are under the same system, they are part of the same organization, so they make it an open discussion. And to the at the conclusion, they said, okay, so since the majority wants us to go, but there is no obligation for individual countries to follow. I mean, for OAPI has no mandate exactly as an organization to engage individual countries on their individual basis. So it's like countries were trying to remain their own jurisdiction when it comes to really adhering as a country to HUPOV, meaning the adhesion of OAPI as an organization is not the adhesion of a country like Senegal, for example, Mali individually. And that's why maybe Benin is trying to join also individually, because they said all countries are free to join if they want. Yeah, so I had
what's the point of OAPI joining as a group?
That's
the individual question. Countries are.
It's a good question, but I asked the question to somebody from Cameroon who also participated in some of the negotiation. I think the main reason is the technical support that UPOV could provide to them, so they have the same system. What I did not tell you in the OAPI dysfunctional system is also the technical difficulty that they have to implement the system. Because to gain protection, you have to also do the tests. The tests that you are respecting the conditions.
Is it new? Is it
uniform? Exactly.
Is it stable? You know,
it's stable.
Yeah,
and for that you need some equipment and
capacity,
a testing system and capacity.
Yeah.
So this did not happen when we were doing the assessment in 2017, 10 years after the entry into force, because of the non-functionality of the centers of excellence that OAPI had established. None of these centers were functioning. So based on what I heard, the technical support that OAPI could get from UPOV has been a big reason for them to join. And also some pressure also, because after adopting the system, the same system as UPOV, the partnership was already established. So now UPOV could convince them progressively to say you will benefit more if you join if
yeah,
part of the
separately.
community. Exactly. So
divide and conquer.
Exactly. So countries are saying individually we are not joining. Yeah. If you join as an organization, the benefit is for the organization, and that's where the technical support is important, maybe.
Yeah.
But individually, countries are still reflecting or not even considering joining UPOF.
Oh, so there okay, is no thank you
on that.
Thank you, Mohammed. We're going to finalize now. And what are the key battles we need to win in the next 5 years to protect seed sovereignty in Africa?
Again?
The key battles that we have to win, that we have to win in the next 5 years.
You know, in the next 5 years.
To ensure the seed sovereignty in Africa.
It is, yeah. I guess the first thing is the recognition of peasant seed system or farmers managed seed system. It's very important because sometimes, as we've seen with the OAPK, what we are fighting is not even working because of the lacking of some conditions that may make them work. Mm-hmm. In the case of WAPI, is the commercial system, is the realities, the realities of the countries that make it very difficult for it to work. If we can continue to protect the systems that are already in use, which are the realities of the countries, it's also an indirect way of fighting the other system.
Yeah.
So, because if this system is working, the other system is going down. So that's the first thing to really fight for. And I think there are some openings and some hope in some countries. I take the example of Mali, for example. We've done really these fights, but very diplomatically, and because it was a negotiation process with the state representatives and also researchers and all the stakeholders. Up to now, we have hope that the new land policy will be adopted, and we know the content of it, the key one being the recognition of two components of the seed system, one being the commercial seed system and the second peasant seed system, and then the each will be developed with its own logic based on its own reality, and we will be now focusing on the peasant seed system to say what we want to improve, not even to improve, to enhance, well, to enhance them, and then to provide more support to them. So if we can do the same thing in different countries, and I see also some openings at the AU level, because during the adoption of the CADEP, there was a lot of noise about the negligence of the peasant seed system and the farming system in favor of agroecology and things like that.
Yeah.
So they opened a window, they call it a policy framework for the recognition of farmer seed system. This is also an opportunity to, once this is, to participate first, to make it really look like we want, and then try to implement this at the national level. Some countries are doing what they call pluralistic seed systems. The case of Uganda, where they recognize also all the types of seed system that exist. In Uganda, we have identified three. First is a commercial seed system. Second is the, what they call it, quality QDS, quality declared seed. And then they call the peasant seed system informal system. So we have to now work on that to move from this informality to the farmer's seed system. Yeah. And then develop the adapted criteria and norms that go with this system to support. the rest
Yeah.
will come naturally if this is there,
Okay.
because all will revolve around this system. Promotion of traditional dish and things like that will come under the recognition of peasant system.
Okay, thank you very much. But finally, any final thoughts you'd
Yes.
like to share about UPOV, 91 African seed laws, farmers' rights, AU model law? Any final thoughts?
Oh, yes. Final thoughts. Like I've said, we need to really find systems that are adapted to our context. I've said that, I repeat it again. And when I say system, I mean legal system, because the legal system follow the practical system. And the practical system exists already in different sectors. In agricultural sector, we have agroecology that used to be in Africa already. It's because of historical reasons and evolution that we've seen different types of systems, which is not bad, but we don't want to have a center role in for a system that has been imported. Our system should be centered around our identity, what we've been doing since, and what evolved naturally and adaptive and naturally because of the changes and the shocks that we see. This will even allow us to be more resilient and to be to have an African modernity, because what is modern is what is adapt to the current reality of the world. It's not just because of technology or technological revolution, smart technology or things like that we will call modern. It's modern because it's adapted to the reality available where it's used. So we have the African modernity to work on, and if we can come up together and develop the legal frameworks that will support that, and then bring the other types of support, like financial support, technical support, and this takes me to the collaboration between farmers and conventional researchers, conventional scientists, to team up, work together in collaborative or participatory research to develop new varieties, even adapted to our context, based on our own traditional varieties, based on our own needs. This is really what we need to do for the future of Africa, for the sustainable development of Africa.
Thank you so much, Professor Mohamed. Really, really appreciate it.
Thanks.
I'm sure all the listeners, who are listening to you,
okay,
in depth discussion and also elaboration, would really appreciate it. We want to draw you to our struggle much more.
Okay, I'm available. I will be pleased to support.
Thank you very much. Have a good night
Thank
now.
You.
Thank you.
Okay,
cheers.
Bye-bye. Okay.